Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Kristen, Karen, and Brittany. Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey. Hello.
Hi.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. All right. Well, let's get right into all the really good books we've been reading. Or not all, because I see we haven't all read very many in the last couple of weeks. We've been super busy. Some traveling and going to different cons and festivals, and others just being busy in general. But let's start with you, Karen, because I know you're dying to talk about it. So go ahead and tell us what you read last week.
Okay, I read The Hammer of Thor by Rick Riordan. It's the second book in the Magnus Chase series, and it was amazing. I think I liked it better than the first book, which is pretty cool because I loved the first book. And nobody else has read this so far, looking at you, Kristen. And
I did
really
start
need
it.
Them to. You did?
I did. I'm only about like 5 chapters in, but I did start it.
Have you met Alex Fierro yet?
Not yet.
Talk to me when you meet that character.
I will. I will make that happen. But I didn't want you to think I'd forgotten. I did start it.
Yes.
And I do still have your personalized copy here that I'm going to put in the mail to you.
Thanks.
Sure, anytime, Care.
Jen got to go to one of his events, and she got me a signed book, like she usually does, because she's amazing, in case everyone was wondering. But this book, I don't want to give too much away, but I will say, like, once again, he has such a diverse cast of characters, and he's really bringing some new themes to the table that I really appreciate. Because his stuff is so mainstream, I really like that he's making such an effort to be more diverse, because it just opens the eyes of all the people reading his books that there are different types of people out there and how they deal with their problems. And not only was this book good on that front, but just like with other themes and other characters that we've already met, like Hearth and Blitz, who I absolutely love. They had some really good stuff in this book as well, and I just want everyone to read it and then come talk to me about it.
Yeah, when I was at the event, it was the very first event. It was launch day. And the event was at An Unlikely Story, which is the same place that we went to the Savata Here event. And it's the coolest bookstore because it's owned by the gentleman who writes Diary of a Wimpy Kid. So they're really cool. And they not only had 200 people in the audience, but they had another space upstairs where they were literally simulcasting it so that they still got to be in the building and hear him speak, which I thought was super cool. So it was really good. And he is just so much fun to listen to him speak. And he was asked about a lot of, you know, the diversity and, you know, different types of characters. And his answer was really, really good. He said, you know, everybody wants to see themselves reflected as a hero. So all of our heroes have to be different. You know, there is no one size fits all when it comes to heroes. Everybody wants to see themselves as a hero. So you don't have to look a certain way or be a certain thing. You can be anything to be a hero. So, I mean, it was really good. So I was pretty excited about that. All right, moving on. Miss Kristen, what have you been reading?
Well, the first book that I'm going to talk about is called Scandal Never Sleeps by Shayla Black and Lexi Blake, who, if you know anything about romance, have written a lot together, and usually their books are really dark or really, like, bordering on, like, erotica than the other, so I was a little nervous going into the series, but this book was so, so well done. It's actually more of a thriller, like mystery, than it is even romance, honestly. And it's about this guy and his 5 friends who all met in like a boarding school. And some of them have, you know, have parents in the picture. Some of them don't. Some of them have terrible parents. Some of them have great parents. And they all just kind of band together in grade school. And they've all grown up to be pretty influential people. One is the president and one's a CEO and all this stuff. And one of the group dies in a plane crash. And they all kind of meet up again at his funeral, and they have to kind of uncover what happened and how this plane crash, like what went on and what was hiding behind all of it. It's really crazy, but it was really, really good. And it was unexpected. I didn't see that coming at all. And I really, really liked it. It's I believe this is the first in what they call the Perfect Gentleman series, which is the name that these guys have given their group. They're kind of the Perfect Gentleman. It's kind of a twist on something they were jokingly called as children. So it's kind of tongue in cheek. But I actually really, really liked it. I'm working on the second book now. And it's good. It's not quite as good as the first one yet, but I'm sure it will get there. And I think there's a third book too, but we'll get there eventually. The other book that I read is Obsidian by Jennifer L. Armentrout, which is the first book
I'm gonna stop you right here for like just a minute. Yeah. How have you never read this series?
Okay. There are some gaping black hole kind of things in my YA romance crossover life, I guess. Okay. Reading list.
This is the series for her.
The first book I read by her was Wait for You. I discovered her as a romance author. Yeah, I discovered her as a romance author before I ever knew she wrote YA. So then I read the Apollyon series, whatever, the Covenant series, which I loved. I just read that in June. And so now my library finally got the entirety of the Lux series in audiobook. So now I'm working through the Lux series. I'm working on Onyx now. I read Obsidian and I really liked Obsidian. And so, yeah. But for those that don't know what the Lux series is about, it's about this girl who moves to a town further. She used to live in Florida. She moves to town up north and she finds out that her neighbors are aliens. And there's a lot of craziness that ensues because of that. I love the way she has, like, defined their alienness. Like, yes. They're creatures of light. They're not green men, little green men who
they're
have
lumen.
A spaceship. Yeah. It's very cool. Like, they're creatures of light, and they can manipulate elements and things because they're creatures of light, and all of that is really, really cool. So I will, let you know as I read the rest of the series.
I'm still in shock. What did you think about the main character, the male main character, Damon?
First of all, in the audiobook, the person mispronounces his name every time she says it and calls him Demon. It's Damon. That's how you're supposed to pronounce that. I've seen the spelling a million times because I follow Jen's stuff. So I've seen it a million times. I like him. He is a pompous jerk face when you first meet him. But you kind of...
And then you get to start to read... There is a time where you will read things from his perspective.
Yeah.
And you start to go, oh.
You kind of start to see things... Like, you start to see why he had to be that way. It's, I've read a lot of jerks that turn out to be golden boys. I've read a lot of romance. So it's, I'm used to that. But he did he was really standoffish at first. I was not a fan. Even at the beginning, I'm like, how does this, this person end up being this character that everyone I know online is like, he's amazing and he's the best. And I'm like, okay. But we'll get there. I'm positive. I liked him quite a bit more by the end of Obsidian. So, yeah. Looking forward to the rest of Onyx.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. All right. Miss Brittany, what have you been reading?
So I picked up two books recently, one of them having a really hard time getting through, and that is The Female of the Species by Mindy McGinnis. It is so dark and not fun to read, but I got it because I wanted something that was a little challenging to read. It's all about, like, rape culture and this girl who's, like, hell-bent on getting vengeance for her sister's death. And it's written it's a YA book. So it's something that I was like, oh, this will be a quick, easy read. But I keep having to go back to it and try to reread it. And so I went on Goodreads like a week after I got it, and I was reading some of the reviews, and I was like, oh, okay, everyone is having a problem reading this book, but everyone who has finished it has given it 5 stars. So I'm slowly working my way through that. I also read Throne of Glass by Sarah Maas, because Empire of Storms came out, and suddenly every single person I follow on Instagram or Twitter was going crazy because they were so excited that this book came out, and I never heard of this series before. So I was like, all right, I'll start this series, and it was good. I have the other two on hold at the library because I guess everyone in my town also got caught up in the Empire of Storms news and started reading the series, so I was only able to get the first one. That's it.
All right. For me, the only thing that I've managed to finish reading is The Goal by Elle Kennedy. It's the fourth and final novel in the Ivy League series. I always get that wrong. Is that right, Kristen?
Off Campus.
Off Campus. Darn it. See, I knew I was going to get it confused. In the Off Campus series, it's Tucker's story, and he was the last of the roommates that kind of had a story left to tell. It was okay. Like, this book starts before technically Dean's book is finished. So it starts the fall of Dean's book, when Dean's book is also being told. So if you guys had read his book, there's some overlap, and you'll start to see why Tucker was behaving the way he was. The really hard part for me was there's a character that dies in Dean's book, and you live through it once. You have to live through it all over again. And yeah. I hate it with a passion. So that was kind of the hard part for me with that book, is that I didn't want to, like, all of a sudden you're reading and so-and-so is alive and you're like, oh, man. So, I mean, it was an interesting way to tell the stories, and the fact that they overlapped. And so you see some things slightly differently, obviously, because you're looking from a different couple's point of view, if you will. So, yeah, I mean, it was interesting. It was a little more, I don't know. I don't want to say depressing. That's not the right word, but a little more serious.
It wasn't as, like, happy-go-lucky as some of the others have been.
I'm trying to find the right words. I'm like, some of the other ones are, they were just kind of fun. And, yeah, they had serious moments, and there were things, obviously, that happened. But this one just felt serious kind of start to finish. So, I mean, I don't know.
Did you see that she is doing a spinoff?
I think I did. For the sister, right?
For Fitzy.
Right, but isn't that with what's-his-name's sister? Yeah.
Yeah.
I assumed that when I saw it.
Yeah, and then I'm sure we'll meet other characters from there. Like, she's doing a whole nother spinoff series, which I'm actually really excited about, because it's a fun world.
Like that. It is a very fun world, so I think it'll be interesting to see what she does with that. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing. And like I said, I did start The Hammer of Thor. I just haven't had time to finish it. And I did go see The Girl on the Train. I don't know if any of you guys have seen it yet.
I did.
What did you think about it?
I have not read the book, so I really didn't know what I was getting into. I knew about, like, what it was about.
Right.
I had seen trailers. I think it's done a major disservice by Gone Girl having come before it, and the movie was so well received that I think Girl on the Train kind of, it's different, and it is a good movie and it's a good story, but it just, the natural comparison to Gone Girl is going to hurt it.
Right. It felt super, super slow and maybe a little too long. Like, I think all the components were there that needed to be. It just felt really slow.
Agreed.
So I don't know if anyone else has seen it. Definitely Luke let Evans, us know your thoughts.
Luke Evans naked for like the first half of the movie. I went and saw it with my brother, and he was like, that guy got paid to just be naked on screen. And I was like, thanks, Steven.
Yes. Yes, he did.
He really is. It's ridiculous, but, you know,
there's nothing wrong with that. But anyway, yeah. So there's that to kind of brighten it up a little bit. But I mean, I think Emily Blunt did a really fantastic job of being the unreliable narrator and stuff like that. It felt a little slow. It could have been, I think, shortened up a little bit, and it would have been a little bit better. All right. So moving on. Karen, you got to go to New York Comic Con. I skipped this year, but tell us, what did you think of New York Comic Con? Did you do anything exciting?
Well, first of all, I was really bummed that you couldn't make it, because New York Comic Con is kind of something that, at least since I started going, that you and Laura and I have kind of always done together. And this year it felt really weird because neither of you were there.
I know, and I was sorry. Oh.
But honestly, New York Comic Con was okay. It wasn't anything special. I think because this year we kind of threw things together last minute, it was a little hectic. I had some fun doing interviews with people I'd never done before, like the Sweet Vicious cast for the new MTV show, and I'm really excited about that. Got to hang out with Danielle for quite a while. It was her first time in New York, so that was really exciting. And, yeah, kind of had a good time outside the con this year rather than at the con. But it's always nice to go, always nice to see what's new and everything. And, you know, they always set up some good stuff there. So it was cool.
Yeah, very true. I know that I saw some news come out of there about the second season of Shadowhunters, which I know people are really excited about. And there was a trailer, which looks really, really cool. I can't wait to kind of see where they go with that next. And then was there any other book stuff, Karen? Did you get to do any fun book stuff? Because BookCon was also going on, but it was going on off-site, which was kind of one of those weird things again.
Let me tell you about BookCon. It was awful. Literally, you just walk down the street and go into this old, like, decrepit-looking building. I didn't even realize that that's what it was. Downstairs, you have, I guess, a room or maybe two rooms for a panel. And upstairs, it was this just open concrete area. There wasn't like a rug or like carpet or anything. It looked like it was a half-finished warehouse or something where they set up some tables and there was like merch and stuff there and then a line to go up and see the authors. And just knowing how they do BEA and how that's usually in the Javits Center and like they do that together, it felt very small. It felt very last minute. And from what I've heard, or at least from one author that I talked to, really enjoyed BookCon. I didn't talk to anybody who had maybe gone to the panels or anything, but at a glance, it just didn't feel the same. So I don't know if they're going to keep doing it like that, but I kind of hope it goes back to the way that it was, because it was much better when there was a lot more going on. But I did get to interview Don Kurtagich, who wrote And the Trees Crept In, which I know I've talked about a million times because I really love that book. And she was super cool. Really fun to talk to, and she's basically convinced me, as a good author would, to read her first book as well, because the first book, she writes standalones, but the first book is similar to the second book, and since I enjoyed that so much, she said the elements that I like from the second book are more so, like, more prevalent in the first one, so definitely going to go back and read that. The interview hasn't gone up yet, but it will soon, so keep an eye on Hypebull for that.
Awesome. That's really cool, because I know how excited you were for that book. So that's very cool you get to speak with her. All right, Miss Brittany, you got to do something cool as well. You got to go to Paley Fest, which isn't necessarily book-related, but did you get to do anything fun while you were there?
Jen, I got to interview Johnny Lee Miller, and I didn't die.
I did not see this posted anywhere. Did I miss this somehow?
No, it's going up tomorrow.
No, but I mean, I didn't even see you, like,
oh, yeah. Oh, it in the I group. Tweeted about it.
Oh, I yeah. saw a tweet and really.
Oh, see, that. I haven't been on Twitter in a bit.
Yeah, last Saturday, I went to PaleyFest. I went to the elementary Made in New York panel, and I was able to interview Rob Dougherty and John Michael Hill and Johnny Lee Miller. Lucy Liu was pulled away at the last minute because she had to go get mic'd up for the actual panel. But It was just awesome getting to talk to the creator specifically, Rob Dougherty, about, you know, adapting Sherlock Holmes in New York City and what it means to set the show in New York. And it was just, the cast seems like they're having a great time. They don't do a lot of press. They usually do one Comic-Con panel a year, and that's it. That's their maximum. Because they're a busy cast. They do 22 episodes in a year. They're one of the few shows that still follows that old network model. But it was amazing. I didn't die. And I really wanted to take pictures while I was interviewing Johnny Lee Miller. And he, like, I've watched interviews with him before, and he's very fidgety, and he doesn't, like, look at the camera or the person that he's interviewing. He did not break eye contact with me the entire time he was giving his
answer.
And
you lived!
And I thought my soul was melting. And, and so I stealthily took a bunch of pictures on my phone while he was staring into my soul, and it was great. I had no idea what he said. Thank God I recorded it, because when I went to transcribe it, I was like, wow, that's a pretty good answer he gave.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
So that was fun.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It sounds very exciting. But let's talk a little bit about some news now that you guys have gotten that all out of the way. So we're going to talk about some of adaptation. I can talk. News. There's a lot going on lately with different movie adaptations and things. One of our favorites here at Book Hype is Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda. You guys have heard us talk about it like extensively. It's by Becky Abertalli, and we loved it. So we knew that it was going to the big screen, but The Hollywood Reporter announced in early September that it was going to be directed by Greg Berlanti. Now, that name may sound familiar to you if you watch Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, or Supergirl, because those are all things that he executive produces. He does have a directing credit. It's a little less extensive. And he's known for Life as We Know It. And that was in 2010 that he directed that film. Something that's also super cool is that the script was co-wrote by Isaac Apteker and Elizabeth Berger. If you guys have maybe seen that new TV show that everyone can't stop talking about called This Is Us, they are the writers, or they work on that project as well. So I'm kind of really excited looking at these people coming together to work on this film project. Like, they're all from, like, such different places, but at the same time, it's all kind of, like, just really cool. It's all things that I like. So I'm hoping that, oh, and of course, Wick Godfrey and Marty Bowen are producing it, and they produce, they're Temple Hill Productions, essentially, and they produce all kinds of YA stuff. They did the Twilight movies, they did The Fault in Our Stars and Paper Towns, they've done Maze Runner. So, I mean, this is their thing. This is their jam, basically. So, what do you guys think about Greg Berlanti directing?
I'm excited. It's a good name. Like, he's got some clout. So, I trust him to do it. And, I mean, seriously, though, like, Wick Godfrey and all of them have adapted everything, I feel like. And every time I write an article about, oh, here's another book that's being adapted, it's always them who are doing it. So I kind of trust them implicitly now. And I think that this is a really good story. And I think it's going to play out well on screen. So I'm kind of just excited all around.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. And like I said, this was one of those movies that I think it's super important, and I think if it's done well, it'll be a lot of fun. And it'll be just a really good movie. Do you know what I mean? But now what they have to do is cast a good Simon, because
that's going to be key. Yeah, no, I actually love Life as We Know It. It's kind of a little bit off. Like, it's a Katherine Heigl, Ashton Kutcher, or no, Katherine Heigl and Josh Duhamel.
Josh Duhamel, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of kooky and weird, but I actually really liked it. And he has a history beyond just the superhero shows that he does now. Like, he was involved in Everwood and Dawson's Creek, and he's got a really rich history in storytelling and producing, you know, these really successful shows. So I'm really excited to see him direct this. I think he's going to do a great job.
Very fun. Very exciting. All right, moving on to some less happy adaptation news. It looks like the Eleanor and Park movie is currently on hold. Rainbow Rowell has the rights back with her, so it is no longer in development anywhere. How someplace like DreamWorks lets that go away and not produce it is beyond me. Because it's such a big, like, everybody loves Eleanor and Park. Like, again, it's one of those movies that can make a statement. So, as of right now.
That's the thing, though. Like, I feel like I'm kind of glad that it's no longer in development because I want it to be perfect. If it comes out,
right,
it has to be perfect. And if it wasn't perfect, and maybe that's why it kind of, you know, fizzled out, then I think I can live with waiting a little bit longer before something else happens with it.
Right. So she worked on the screenplay, was part of it. She wanted to work on the screenplay. And so the option timed out, the screenplay wasn't finished, and so she got the rights back. So I guess we'll see. And she, one of the things she says is that, you know, these are the two characters that are easiest to hurt. Yeah. And so I'm very protective of them. So, I mean, I think going into it that she wants to make sure they're right for lots of reasons. And that's fair.
Absolutely.
We know lots of authors who have gone ahead and done things with, you know, had their books adapted and they've hated them. So,
yeah.
I'm not going to talk about anyone. Google it.
Yeah. Eleanor and Park, I think you kind of just fall in love with whatever Rainbow Rowell book you read first, because this was my first and it is the one I hold above all else. Like, I've read Fangirl, I liked it, but I love Eleanor and Park. And I, knowing that something just wasn't right about it, like, if it didn't get off the ground right away, I'm with Karen. I'm glad that it's not necessarily going forward right now. Hopefully something will come up and someone will come up with the perfect, you know, way to adapt it and say, I have a vision, I want this movie, and it'll happen later. But I'm very protective. I'm very worried. I was so worried about this when they first announced it that I was like, guys. So I'm actually okay with this.
I'm just happy that she has the rights back, because a lot of things get tied up and I want her to have this book because it means so much to her. So I'm so happy that she just has them back. Whether or not I'm very exhausted by adaptations, so I'm glad it's not being made right now.
Yeah. Well, going down this list of adaptation stuff.
I know.
Because it's
when
long.
I got to the dock and I was like, oh, look at all these adaptations.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. All right. So the next one is Throne of Glass, which you just read, right? Correct, Miss Brittany?
Yes, I did.
So this is a huge series. Ariana also is very much into the series, as is Laura. And they talk about it all the time. So this was optioned, but it's going to be a TV series, and it's going to be on Hulu, which I think is super interesting because Netflix will have the series of Unfortunate Events adaptations coming to them, and now we'll have Hulu kind of getting in on the action as well. So, and I know Amazon Prime has done a bunch of original, like, TV shows based on books as well, like Man in the High Castle and stuff. So this is really interesting that these kind of internet-based companies are getting involved in the adaptation game. I think it's going to bring like an entirely new level to how these things are done, because Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime have such a different schedule and such a different way of doing things. I think it'll really start to affect how these adaptations are made, and that film companies won't be able to dawdle, or, you know, if they're going to be on TV, that they won't be able to dawdle either. So I'm really curious to see how this kind of plays out. So the pilot will be written by Kira Snyder. For all of you 100 fans, she is one of the writers for that show, which is also a book adaptation. And then Anna Forrester, who also helmed an episode of Outlander. Hello, Outlander, seriously. And Underworld Blood Wars will direct the pilot for Hulu. So Hulu is not playing by any stretch of the imagination. Hulu came to play with this one because this is like a huge kind of epic fantasy world. And so they got some people on there who know what they're doing when it comes to this stuff. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do with this. Have any of the rest of you read The Throne of Glass or that any of that series?
No,
I haven't, but people have been going on and on about it in Jen Armentrout's Facebook fan group. Like, the number of people who've been screaming about that series in the last like couple of months, I need to read it. I just have to get there.
Yeah, it is obscenely popular. I think it'll be really interesting to see what they do with it and how they present it, I guess, because I think that particular one is going to have 7 books or like 5 full length and then a bunch of novellas. Like, there's 2 series that overlap. So I sometimes have trouble keeping them straight, but I don't know. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that one. Moving right along in the adaptation news, we have John Green getting in on the game with something that's not really an adaptation. But while he's writing this new novel, this mystery novel, he's, you know, taking a break from everything with. He's also gotten in on this movie about soccer, basically. You guys, if you follow John Green at all, you know that he kind of is in love with Wimbledon football, as it's called in England. And it's the AFC Wimbledon Football Club. And he actually sponsors the team. And it's the story about how the team, there was an original team called Wimbledon FC, and they were relocated to a place 56 miles away from the original hometown. So the people didn't believe that they belonged to them anymore. And so they created a different Wimbledon team called AFC Wimbledon Football Club. And John Green got involved and he sponsors the team. They sport Nerdfighteria and DFTBA logos on their uniforms. As you would, because you're John Green. And so now he's involved in the movie that they're going to make about this particular football club. So that's really different and interesting. It's not something I guess you would normally think about.
Brittany, are you as pumped for this as I am?
I'm like, I am really excited about this.
Me too.
Of course you are.
Because AFC Wimbledon is such a huge part of my life because I listen to John Green's podcast and he closes with AFC Wimbledon updates. Like, I don't follow them at all, but for some reason I own a scarf and I know everything that's going on in third tier English football.
That's because amazing.
I am very dedicated to their season whenever I listen to Dear Hank and John. And I also watch all of John's football, like his FIFA channel where he plays the video game, and I know it's not the same team, but like I just watch them because they're kind of like podcasts. And I don't watch soccer at all unless it's the World Cup or the Olympics, and I'm really invested in AFC Wimbledon and their story. I think it's great. They have like the Womble is their mascot and he is so cool. It's like this weird little like creature and it's awesome. It's so cool.
I can't believe you know all about these things.
Karen does
too. It baffles
too.
The mind.
I mean, again, I'm not super invested in like the sport, but I love this story. And having followed Vlogbrothers for several years now, I kind of saw the creation of this and saw how much John has started to get involved in the team, and they raise money for them, and people are really invested in this team all around the world. People who are Vlogbrothers fans love that he's gone above and beyond for this team, and that the team, in turn, you know, where's the Nerdfighteria logo. And it's just a cool story. And as somebody who absolutely loves sports movies and tends to cry because of sports movies more than any rom-com or anything like that, this will get me. So yeah, I'm super excited for it.
All right, then. Very, very interesting. I can't wait to hear more and to watch you guys talk about it, because it just baffles my mind that you're so into, like, random UK soccer. All right. Moving right along to a headline I never thought I would be reading out loud. Lionsgate says new Twilight movies are still a possibility. Okay, Lionsgate, I would love to know where you're going to get your material from, because there is no new Twilight material to work with. And I think that ship has definitely sailed and maybe fell off a cliff. But that's just me. So when you guys hear that, what do you think? Honestly.
The same thing.
Yeah. Because burn it, shut it down.
Yeah. Everything that I've heard about Stephanie Meyer's writing is that she is moving on or has moved on from Twilight. And I've heard her say before, like, that era wasn't necessarily good for her. And I think she is trying other things. And I think that's great for her. I think it's weird that they would say this knowing that there isn't any new material, because it just feels like they're grasping at straws at this moment. Like, they want to keep it in the headlines when there's no point to keep it in the headlines. And I don't know. It just, like you said, it's pointless. Like, where are they going to get the material from?
Right. And it's that, so basically the quote from, let's see, Patrick Washberger, he says, it's a possibility, not a certainty, but it's a possibility. It's about Stephanie. If she wants to tell a story related to those characters, we're here for her. I don't know. I'm just basically, like, I don't think she wants to tell a story, quite frankly.
I was going to say, basically, the Divergent series crashed and burned because they treated it terribly. Right. And so now they're trying to remind people, like, hey, remember those movies we did that did really well, even though they weren't necessarily the best adaptations? Yeah, we're going to do more of those at some point, maybe, if the author wants to. So remember that. Right. Like, it's like they're trying to distract from the fact that they screwed up really bad with Divergent. Yeah. I don't see her going back to that well anytime soon, but who knows? Sometime in the future, she may be interested and they'd probably jump at it.
But I don't think she is, because she still could be working on Midnight Sun, which is something people have been really waiting for. Like, fans of the series would love that. And let's face it, E.L. James just pulled a fast one and did Grey. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I think that's the one thing fans would want to see. And if it's anything else, that I don't think they're going to be all that interested. I mean, and Stephanie has written another novel that is more of the Jason Bourne one there, The Chemist. So I don't think she's looking to live in that world any longer, quite frankly. So I'm going to say not ever happening.
This also feels a little bit like following in the footsteps of Fantastic Beasts. That was kind of hard to say. Where, you know,
you have the spinoff,
if there's some extra material, we'll just make it into movies. Or maybe we can just take a character that we've heard about and make it into a movie. If Harry Potter can do it, Twilight can do it.
Yes, but Harry Potter is penned by J.K. Rowling.
Hey, you don't have to tell me.
And, oh, by the way, the new Fantastic Beasts trailers that have been popping up everywhere. Yes, please.
Pretty please. They look so great.
It's just beautiful. It, like, that is one of my most favorite time periods to see things in. I don't know why. I just love it. To read that time period, to see that time period. So, like, to see it and to see geeky little what's-his-name as Newt Scamander, I love it.
The first trailer that came out when I was at my job. And I watched it and I started. I don't get emotional very easily. When I saw, what's his name? Colin Farrell?
Yeah.
When I saw him apparate and like just show up, I started crying because the magic, I'm just so excited to be back in the wizarding world that I don't even care if it's not the wizarding world that I know. I'm just so excited to go back.
And the Nifflers.
Oh, I just love all of it.
The creatures, all of it. I love the guy who's the nomad. I want to be a wizard.
He's so cute.
I just love him. Like, just the couple lines he has, just the way he kind of gives the, I don't know. I love them. And I'm really, really excited to see what kind of comes out of that. And just as a side note, I know it came out that it's going to probably be a 5-part film series, which is also super exciting.
Listen, if they get to the Wizarding Wars, I don't know what to do with myself. I'm just very excited. I know everyone wants to jump on it and trash it. That's the internet's first response.
That's how the internet functions.
They want to be the person who comes out and hates it. I'm so excited. I'm not even trying to hide my enthusiasm. Everyone else can be the Darias of the internet. I can't hide it. I'm so pumped.
My biggest excitement point is that we don't know these stories. They're not books. Yes. It's not like the Harry Potter books where we were hoping for this moment and this moment. Like, these are all just going to be brand new. And yeah, I'm so geeked for them. I can't even tell you. So I'm with you, Brittany. I don't care about the internet.
Yeah, no, I always take the internet with a grain of salt because let's face it, the tides change rather quickly on the internet depending on where we're at. So
and honestly, I think everyone who's trying to be the person who says, oh, I wish you would stop writing, and oh, I'm so over it. I'm over Pottermore. I am very open about that. But anyone who is not, like, who says that they're not excited for Fantastic Beasts is just lying to themselves because they're excited.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's awesome. That was a little off topic, so let's focus back on our
other adaptation. I mean, it's fine.
So other really big news that we're super excited about, because, again, this is a book that we really loved. The Darkest Minds has found its Ruby in Amandla Stenberg from The Hunger Games. You guys might remember her, which I think is going to be amazing. I'm really excited about this casting.
I don't think I could be any more excited. This was, I never pictured her as Ruby or anything like that, but this, to me, is, best case scenario. This is the best person that they could have gotten for this role, and I am so pumped. I saw this, I think I saw Alexandra...
she tweeted it,
yeah. And I saw it, and I just started flipping out, and I, sent it to Jen, and I was, in all caps, I'm writing this up right now, because this is just going to be so cool, and yes. I kind of forgot that this adaptation was still, moving forward, but now that we're getting the casting, it's feeling like it's a reality.
And I just like that it's not what you would typically think for Ruby when you read the novel. I just like that they went in a different direction. And I think they went on based on someone who has the ability to be Ruby, not on the ability to look like what someone might think Ruby might look like. Do you know what I mean? And I think definitely. That's super important, that it's all about, she's a great actress and she could definitely be Ruby, because Ruby goes through some stuff. That character is not an easy character to get through. So I'm pretty excited that they chose her. Alrighty, moving right along. Karen, this must be one of yours. So Disney is planning a live action. What aren't they planning a live action of, please? Of Don Quixote, why?
I'm actually kind of excited about it.
I mean, it's interesting, but I feel like it's Disney is planning a live action. Fill in the blank with whatever thing you can find right now. Just throw it and maybe it'll stick.
But I feel like this is a story that not people in the younger generations now probably don't know this story. They've heard about it. They've probably heard it mentioned in pop culture. Newsroom used the references to Don Quixote all the time, but people don't necessarily know the story. So I feel like this could be a really cool way to get kids involved in classic literature.
Yeah, I am really hoping that they film it all of their really, really old movies, Mary Poppins, and just in that style, because I don't need all this awesome CGI stuff. I want them to film it like they have only the resources of the 40s and 50s available to them, because I think that this is a story that they should have done way back then. But I do love Karen's article. It is linked in the show notes because she talks about Wishbone a lot, and that is my first exposure to this story.
Yes!
Was from the Wishbone episode. Yes. About
that
this.
That is all I need to know about Don Quixote, to be completely honest, is the Wishbone version, because it was fabulous. So good.
So good. And I think I had the book too, because Wishbone had a companion book series.
Oh, yeah. God, I miss Wishbone so much. Jen, I want to know why you were this must be yours, Karen.
Because I feel like we've talked about Don Quixote and you've talked about it before, like you really liked it.
Oh, have we? Literally all I know about Don Quixote is what Wishbone taught me, so.
Okay, I don't know. For some reason, I felt like this was something that you would be really excited about.
I'm looking forward to it. I think that it's interesting. I mean, this story, honestly, has been adapted like a bajillion times, but I also feel like none of us are really aware of that. A lot of older projects had gone through and stuff, and there's another one that has been in the works for like 17 years or something crazy, and they never got enough money to actually shoot the movie. So I don't feel like this is something that's been overdone, at least recently. And the idea of Disney taking it on is, it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. All right, moving right along. Now we're actually going to talk about real book news, like actual books in paper form or electronic form, as the first one will point out to us. This one came out a little while ago, but just because we brought up J.K. Rowling, might as well do it one more time with feeling. So Pottermore released 3 ebooks with new information directly written by J.K. Rowling, and it's about Harry Potter's Wizarding World. So there were the 3 different books, and somebody actually did the math, because why wouldn't they, and have discovered that there are 4,400 new words by Rowling across the 3 ebooks. The majority of new content can be found in the Heroism, Hardship, and Dangerous Hobbies, and The Power of Politics and Pesky Poltergeists. So I don't know. Did you guys read these? Did you even look at them?
No.
To be completely honest, I put this link in the doc, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to skim through these so I know what we're... I saw how long the list was, and I, after the, like, 3rd one, I swear to God, I was like, you know what? This is just too much work.
Yeah. There's a lot going on here. So just as a heads up, if you guys want to read it, we will put the link in the article, in the section, so you guys can go through and read all the new things if you missed it. But there's clearly a lot of information that she drops. Nothing earth-shattering, I don't think. Just some very historical information regarding Harry Potter and that world. Not the Fantastic Beasts world. Not that historical. Moving right along for some more actual book news. Rainbow Rowell is going to pop up again. And evidently she would like to write a sequel to Carry On. So, Brittany, you read Carry On, didn't you?
I did.
How did you feel about Carry On?
I think I talked about this before.
I think you did. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I liked it in, like, very far, far retrospect, because I really came around to wanting to really reread it after I saw Cursed Child and got the Scorbius ship in my head. I'm like, oh no, now I really want to reread Carry On, but think of it as Scorbius and Albus. And... it's good. I don't really think it needs a sequel, but if she has fun with these characters, so if she really wants to revisit this world and play around with them, I think that the book ended at a point where she has plenty of room to go on, carry on, if you will, and write whatever she wants about it. And it'll be good, because it's a very interesting world. The main thing that I really didn't like about it when I first read it was that it is very, like, Hogwarts ripoff-y. She does try to make it a separate world, but it's clearly inspired by the Wizarding World, and they're just a lot of things feel the same, and so that kind of hangs over the bigger story. But if she were to write more, I think she's far enough removed now where she can venture into a new area. And I'd be interested to read more about it with Albus and Scorpius in my head.
Interesting, interesting. All right, moving right along to yet another author we've spoken about this podcast. Let's talk a little bit more about Rick Riordan. Disney and Publishers Weekly announced that Rick Riordan is going to have his own, essentially his own imprint is what it comes down to. It's going to be called Rick Riordan Presents. As we all know, the man writes like 2 to 3 books a year anyway. He can't possibly write anymore. It's just not physically possible. So what they're doing is he is going to start curating a collection of books by other authors and that are all mythology based. So basically the whole imprint is devoted to mythology based books for middle grade readers. And Stephanie Owens-Laurie, who is Riordan's editor, said, "I know Rick feels that in some instances, the books his readers are asking for him to write are really someone else's story to tell." So he's going to basically be curating and reading novels about mythology and bringing them to the imprint, and they will be under the imprint of Rick Riordan Presents. It's going to be much like what James Patterson is doing. James Patterson has a YA novel imprint called Jimmy Patterson, and he curates the novels. They're not like his other novels where he gives the, as far as I know, they're not, where he like gives the ideas and such. He just curates the novels that have already been written by others. So I think that's really interesting, and I think it's really fun that these big name authors can kind of handpick some stories that people might not necessarily look at or find on their own and be able to kind of put a spotlight on them. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm pumped for this just because as a huge fan of Rick Riordan, of course I want him to write all of the things, but as a human being, he cannot write all of the things. And the idea that he is being handed manuscripts and personally looking at them and picking the ones that he thinks are best, that is really exciting to me. And I think, you know, I always am interested in mythological stories. And if other people can come at the myths in a different way to make them unique, especially because they'll have his stamp of approval, like, I'm all in, I'll read them.
Yeah. And I think that's really good because I think, again, he has such an impact on reading and what kids are going to read and the willingness of kids to read that it's important. And so for him to come out and have an imprint where kids can go, well, if Rick Riordan likes it, then it's got to be good. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think that's it's super important. So it'll be exciting to see what the first few books that come out of there are. Talk about curating things. Kind of leads nicely into this next topic. Audible, so for those of you guys who like audiobooks, Audible is starting a new initiative where they are curating collections of audiobooks based on certain themes. And the first theme is called Sounds of Setting. Karen, you wrote up this article, so do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, this was really interesting. I had no idea they were going to be doing something like this, but now that I'm thinking more about it, it's kind of perfect because if you're looking for a certain type of book, not necessarily books by a certain author or anything like that, but a certain kind of book, you can go to Audible, you can visit their collections, and you can find them based on a certain topic or theme. And in this one, it's wherever the setting is almost like another character to the story. So where the setting is an integral part of the plot. And they've just decided to lead it with Carl Hyacin's Razor Girl, and they've got a few other books to kind of, like 13 books total to support that, and you can just go in and read all of them, and they're all that kind of same, like, setting is important. And I just think that's really neat, and I think it's a cool way to give readers a chance to read things that maybe they wouldn't have noticed before.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's really cool. Alrighty. Let's talk a little bit about, for you Game of Thrones fans out there, who are probably the most patient fans on the face of the planet, rumor has it that finally you guys will get a chapter from The Winds of Winter, the very long-awaited Winds of Winter. For those of you who don't know anything about Game of Thrones. Currently, the TV show has eclipsed where the novels actually end. So the TV show is creating its own story to tell, and no one really knows what will happen in the Winds of Winter. But it looks like there's a Game of Thrones enhanced edition coming out, and that it will include the Winds of Winter chapter. You would think you might be able to get more than one chapter because it's been about 6 years since the last book. So I don't know. But something to be excited about because it will be some of the first new material from George R.R. Martin in quite a long time. None of you guys read the Game of Thrones, correct?
No.
I read the first three, and I think it's the third one. It's either the third book or the fourth book that I never finished. Because it was just so dry. I own the first three. They're good. I mean, especially the first one. If you like the show, you really should read the first book, especially. After that, I don't know what to tell you because it kind of gets out of hand for me. But they're definitely an interesting read.
Mm. All right, then. All right, moving right along, because we totally forgot to talk about this earlier where we were talking about everything else. When we were at the event for Rick Riordan, he announced the third Magnus Chase book title and a couple of future project things he has coming up. So the third title for this is Ship of the Dead, and it's set for release on October 3rd, 2017. And the current plan is that this will be the final book in the series. So Karen, you can start crying now. We'll send tissues.
I am a little emotional about it.
I know. Only three, which is kind of short. I think the only other one that had three books only was the Kane Chronicles.
Yeah, it sounds like his Percy Jackson series, he just cannot contain to three books, so he usually does five. And yeah, with the other ones, he sticks to three, which is fair. It's still a good, you know, set amount for a series. But
right.
I love Magnus so much.
I know.
I just want to keep reading about him.
And he did say that that was not, like, set in stone, but as of right now, it looked like three. So we'll see. And then there, you know, he talked about the Trials of Apollo book two, which is titled The Dark Prophecy. And that comes out May 2017. And that Jason Grace will be appearing again and adding to his story, might not be over, so that they may pop up in other, or he may pop up in other stories or get his own story eventually. And there will be five books in the Trials of Apollo series.
Thank God.
Yeah, they, you know, it's okay, Karen.
I expected plenty. Nothing less.
Plenty of that for you. Yeah. All right. And then there's some other really fun new book news. For fans of Cora Carmack, she has a new YA romance / I don't know, because the cover looks incredible. Kind of high fantasy, I'm going to say. Novel coming out in, is it next June, it looks like?
I believe it's next, yeah, it is
June 13th.
It was originally supposed to be next fall, but they must have pushed it back because originally we were expecting it next November.
Oh, I don't know. It says June 13th on what I'm reading, so we'll see if that actually happens. So the cover is gorgeous. The woman is like this crazy warrior on the cover, and it looks amazing. The title of the book is called Roar. And a little bit about it, it says that in a land ruled and shaped by violent magical storms, power lies with those who control them. Aurora Paven comes from one of the oldest Stormling families in existence. Long ago, the Ungifted pledged fealty and services to her family in exchange for safe haven, and a kingdom was carved out from the wildlands and sustained by magic capable of repelling the world's deadliest foes. As the sole heir of Paven, Aurora has been groomed to be the perfect queen. She's intelligent and brave and honorable, but she's yet to show any trace of magic she'll need to protect her people. To keep her secret and save her crown, Aurora's mother arranges for her to marry a dark and brooding Stormling prince from another kingdom. At first, the prince seems like the perfect solution to all her problems. He'll guarantee her spot as the next queen and be the champion her people need to remain safe. But the more secrets Aurora uncovers about him, the more a future with him frightens her. So, it should be interesting.
The coolest part about this series is that it's, like, where most high fantasy has people who like just delve in magic, the magic is very specific in these that they're going to be able to control the weather and like,
right,
like stop storms and start storms. And like, that is like the tent pole of the series. And I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am about these. I think I've talked enough about Cora before. I love her and I love her books. And she has been dying to write a fantasy series, like a whole high fantasy world for herself, and hasn't like ever had something that, you know, really gave her the full opportunity to do it. So when she was able, you know, to get a publisher to bite on this, she was like dying. So I'm just so excited. And the cover is so like Daenerys Targaryen, like, she looks like Daenerys from the back, but, you know, she's a totally different character, and I'm just really geeked. So I had to throw it in there as an extra little tidbit. No,
and,
at the end.
And if, yep, and we can put the link, and there's also an excerpt for you guys to read if you want to check that out. I mean, granted, the wait might be a little while, but it might be worth it to check it out. All right, so let's talk about what's up next. Next week, we are going to be talking about Ursula K. Le Guin and her various novels and things. We had talked about her a while back when they were doing some things for her in the news, and she had an interview and she was incredibly sassy, and we decided we needed to learn more about her. And then our October book, which we haven't even talked about yet until just recently, will be Cursed by Jennifer L. Armentrout. It's a novel that came out a while ago, so if you guys want to pick it up from your library or pick it up on Amazon or something, it should be pretty easy to find. But it's a novel none of us have actually read, even though we have read and loved Jennifer L. Armentrout's things. And it's got a little bit of magic and a little bit of creepy, so it'll be perfect for Halloween, which is coming up quickly. So, until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.